Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what we call the battle space of the war of ideas. And boy, oh boy, do we have a terrific lineup of combatants in that space for you today. Starting with Robert Spencer, a man much in the news, some for good reason, some for not, in the aftermath of the Norwegian murderous attacks conducted, we're told, in the name of anti-Muslim sentiment. But we're going to probe with Robert Spencer who really benefited from these attacks and why. We ought to be very skeptical about the perpetrators' motivations. Secondly, we'll be talking with Carolyn Glick, get some of her take on the Norwegian business, but also the development yesterday in the United Nations, where the United States happily came down squarely opposing the unilateral declaration of a Palestinian state. Segment three, we'll be visiting with best-selling author Daniel Silva about his new book, Portrait of a Spy, and the seeming uncanny resemblance it has to the real world. We'll be visiting with him about all of that and more. Jim Hansen, our boots on the ground guy, will give us his take on what's happening in Afghanistan, specifically some of the losses that have just been suffered at the hands of the Afghan Taliban. What will it mean for the surge? What will it mean for the campaign? All of that ahead. But first, Robert Spencer, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. You are the director of Jihad Watch, an eminent and highly accomplished author, an essayist par excellence, and a man we have turned to frequently for counsel and direction on understanding, in particular, the term I think you've coined for it is the stealth jihad, the Muslim Brotherhood's operations inside the West. And I guess, Robert, I'd like to get sort of against all of that backdrop, your take on what went down in Norway and whether we're being misled in terms of the motivations of the perpetrator.
Oh, we certainly are, Frank. No doubt about it. The perpetrator is being portrayed as an anti-jihadist, as a Christian, as a conservative. And if you actually look at his 1,500-page manifesto in detail, he was none of those things. He was somebody who said that he would see the need in some cases for a partnership with jihadis, which indicates that he did not see them as his primary enemy, and somebody who said that he was not religious, but if he was any kind of religion, he was a worshiper of the old Norse gods Odin and Thor, so he was not a Christian. And he praises Obama and plagiarizes large sections of the Unabomber manifesto, indicating a sympathy for perspectives quite different from what is ordinarily identified as conservatism. So he wasn't a conservative. But this is the worst part of this tragedy, Frank, is that 70-some people now have been murdered, and second only to that is that this is being exploited by the left and by Islamic supremacists to try to discredit, marginalize, and silence everybody who's standing up to the stealth jihad and to the violent jihad.
Yeah. This is really the point that I wanted most to cover with you, Robert Spencer. You're one of those who has been named in his so-called manifesto. The implication has been that somehow you have influenced or encouraged or at least legitimated his activities. I'd like you to speak to that point directly, but also just to dwell on that issue of who's really benefiting from these misinformation distortions, deceptive, you know, representations. Well, call them what you will.
Well, what's trying to be done, what the goal, clearly, of the New York Times, which blamed me for the killings, and the NBC, which did so also, and all these other leftist media outlets, is that they want to portray any kind of resistance to the jihad as being inciting to the kind of murder that we saw in Norway the other day, and thus to be ruled out of polite discourse altogether. That seems to be the goal. But in any case, really, there isn't any way that rationally I could be tied to these murders in the 10 books and hundreds of articles and 25,000 blog posts and counting at Jihad Watch, there is not a single thing that anybody can point to. And believe me, you know, they certainly would be this week if they could, that is actually calling for violence or any real incitement. And so they are ignoring selectively the parts of the guy's manifesto that don't fit, like his praise of Obama and so on, and focusing in on the ones that that will fit their paradigm. But ultimately, the only ones who are going to benefit are the jihadis themselves.
Now, the other thing that, and we'll come back to that in a moment, Robert Spencer is our guest of Jihad Watch. He is, as he says, the author of 10 books, including New York Times bestsellers, The Truth About Muhammad, and The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades. Robert, one of the things that is striking about this selective accounting of the manifesto and the other influences on this chap is that the New York Times, among others, seems to be overlooking his rather considerable evidence of an affinity for, a preoccupation with, television programs and other forms of entertainment, video games and the like, that that promote psychopathic behavior, you know, serial murder and the like. It just strikes one as unbelievable that they're finding fault with people like you who have been promoting for years lawful and entirely legitimate pushback against people trying to destroy our freedom, and they're giving a complete pass to people in the entertainment industry and elsewhere who have been cultivating this kind of warped and obviously homicidal behavior.
Yeah, quite so. And, you know, they don't have any beef with the gaming industry, with the people who put out things like World of Warcraft and so on, which encourage children or whoever is playing the games to pretend to be homicidal murderers. That's all okay, because it's not representing a political perspective that threatens the establishment. But the left is completely aligned with Islamic supremacists who are advancing the agenda of Islamic law in various ways, violent and nonviolent, and so they are considerably threatened by people like us who are pushing back. And so the gaming angle, which is actually much more likely to have inspired his violence than anything that we have said, is completely ignored, and this spurious connection to us is played up.
Yeah, and as you say, this World of Warcraft is a activity. He said he took a year off to do nothing but, you know, hone his skills in that, again, psychopathic training program. Robert, we only have a minute or two left. Let me ask you very quickly, and again, our guest is Robert Spencer, the esteemed blogger, author, commentator, and I think leader on the counter-jihad. One of the things that is afoot, an axis between the left and the Islamists, as you've said, is the institution, piecemeal or wholesale, of what amounts to Sharia blasphemy laws and regimes in the West. Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, has indicated that she thinks that there's a possible way of bridging between the Organization of the Islamic Conference's longstanding efforts to impose this program and our rights under our Constitution of freedom of expression. In a minute, can you speak to that and the dangers, if we get this wrong, that we will find ourselves on that very slippery slope?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we're already on it, Frank. I mean, this is something that's been going on for years. The newly renamed Organization of Islamic Cooperation has been for years trying to compel the UN to adopt measures that would criminalize what they call Islamophobia, which is essentially any analysis of how Islamic jihadists use the texts and teachings of Islam to justify violence and supremacist activity to advance Islamic law. And the idea would be to render us mute and thus defenseless in the face of this advancing Sharia threat. And so this has been given a tremendous shot in the arm by the shooter in Norway. And it makes one wonder, you know, you were asking who benefits. Well, who benefits is so diametrically opposed to what Breivik said he stood for that it does raise the question, either this man was very stupid, which of course he may well have been, since you have to be deranged to commit mass murder, I think, And so he's either very stupid and he doesn't realize how he's harming the very cause that he hopes to advance, or it's a false flag operation to start with, and he's actually on the other side.
And we will be pursuing that more with you, I'm sure, Robert Spencer and others in the days ahead. Thank you so much for your great work. Keep it up. Be not discouraged. We need your leadership and vision and authentic mastery of the subject matter more than ever now. Thank you, Robert Spencer. Next up, Carolyn Glick joins us. We'll get more on her take about this Norwegian business and also the U.S. veto at the U.N. or the threat thereof, in connection with the Palestinians' unilateral declaration of independence. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there is no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by the inimitable Carolyn Glick. She is a columnist for the Jerusalem Post. She is a senior fellow for the Center for Security Policy, specializing in Middle Eastern affairs, and she is also the author of Shackled Warrior and the driving force behind LATMA. So many credentials and so many wonderful qualifications for the kinds of strategic conversations and insights that we turn to you to elicit each time we get a chance to visit, Carolyn. I'd want, first of all, I guess, to start with your take on what happened in Norway and what you think the implications might be, not just for those in Europe but elsewhere around the world who are confronting now, as we talked about with Robert Spencer a short while ago, a concerted pushback by those who champion Sharia to say, well, see, this isn't a problem with us. It's really just Christians and conservatives and other extremists, nothing to do with us. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I mean, one of the problems with the whole Sharia law thing is that it is fundamentally antithetical to the whole notion of democracy and to liberalism as we know them in the West. And so, you know, essentially any act of terrorism is an act that undermines democracy, because instead of using rhetoric and argumentation to try to win your points among the public, as one does in a democracy, they resort to violence and murder in order to obtain with a gun what they cannot achieve at the ballot box. And so really any kind of terrorism from whatever angle is antithetical to the very notion of liberal democracy. And unfortunately what we're finding, particularly on the left, with their attempts to merge Breivik's murder of innocents in a terrorist act in Norway with the argumentation, the rhetorical participation of so many conservative thinkers in the Western world in the debate about the most salient issues of our time, multiculturalism, jihad, and all the rest of it, is that they're really trying to silence debate. And so they are acting in a way, I mean, differently from terrorists, of course, because it's not a use of violence, but they are trying to connect very important arguments to the cause of murder in order to try to silence that debate and in doing so kill democracy. So I think that it is a very, very troubling phenomenon that we're seeing here. And I just add, you know, that there was a man last September who took hostages at the Discovery Channel in Maryland, and he was doing it in the name of environmentalism. His name was Jason Lee, and he said that he had been turned on to the need to use terrorism after watching Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth, about the coming environmental Armageddon. And yet after that happened, no one accused, and rightly so, no one accused Al Gore of being responsible for that, just as nobody accused Al Gore of being responsible for the actions of Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, who had a well-worn copy of Al Gore's book about environmentalism in his cabin in Montana. So, I mean, the reason why they weren't, nobody accused Al Gore of the acts of terrorists who appreciated his work, who admired his work, is because he wasn't responsible for it. He was engaging in argument and rhetoric in writing that book and in producing that film whose aim was to win the hearts and minds of citizens of his democracy. And that's totally legitimate. What his fans do with what he writes or produces is not, it's not his responsibility.
Yeah. Carolyn, on this very point, and you've put the case exceedingly well, we are witnessing an effort by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton with the Organization of the Islamic Conference, or Islamic Cooperation, I guess is the new version they're giving the name, to bridge differences between our First Amendment rights in the United States, freedom of expression, and the efforts by this OIC outfit to suppress expression that they find offensive in any way. And as you say, they are seizing upon this episode in Norway and are trying very much to use it to advance the silencing. And the bridge that seems to be on offer from the Clinton administration, excuse me, the Hillary Clinton on behalf of the Obama administration, is that if any given expression has consequences that are offensive, then that would be problematic. That would require some kind of recourse, you know, whether it's prohibiting or whether it's criminalizing it or in other ways, you know, suppressing it. From your perspective, Carolyn Glick, on the front lines of freedom, how grave a threat do you see such initiatives representing to the kind of legitimate legal discourse, to say nothing of warnings that are entirely in order?
Well, I think that, you know, these kinds of actions that usually take place, unfortunately, or generally take place, consistently take place by politicians and ideologues on the left. And I think it's important to note that, because this whole plan is essentially political. And why do I say that? Because when you look at political speech, the kind that I engage in, the kind that you engage in. There is no way to fuse the words that we write or say with murder, because the only way in democratic society that such a connection can be made in a legitimate fashion is if a person calls directly for other people to commit acts of violence with the full expectation that they will carry them out. And today, in the world that we live in today, there is only one group of political writers or activists who do such things, and those are the jihadists. Those are people like Yusuf Qaradawi, who call for his adherents, his followers, his readers, his viewers, to wage jihad, to carry out suicide bombings, understanding full well that the ideology that they share is going to act as an impetus, along with his calls for them to use acts of murder or terrorism in order to get their way. And they operate outside of the nexus of democracy. They operate inside of the nexus of totalitarian Islamism. And so when Clinton says that she wants to bridge this gap, you cannot bridge a gap between people who call for an abrogation of free speech and people whose very life as a society is based upon the protection of free speech as the foundation of liberal democracy. What you can, moreover, when you do that with people who subscribe to, listen to, respect people like Qaradawi, who are in fact inciting murder, whose words do in fact bear a direct connection to acts of murder and violence, then it shows that really this isn't an attempt to bridge divides in the name of peace or some other lofty goal, but rather it is a political move to win political alliances, sometimes against a common foe and sometimes just in general. And that is what I see the actions of Secretary of State Clinton as being, and I find them extremely disturbing.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. Carolyn, we have about a minute to go. Quickly, the United States apparently put a very strong marker down yesterday at the United Nations against any effort by the Palestinians to use the UN as a vehicle for formally recognizing and unilaterally declared state of Palestine. This comes as something of a surprise. Happy news, I guess. Any quick thoughts on it?
I mean, it was long in coming, and it's also going to be ineffective if the United States thinks that this is going to stop the Palestinians from moving forward in the UN. The only way, as former U.S. Ambassador to the UN John Bolton has said, for the United States to really put a stop to this nonsense is for the United States to threaten to defund the United Nations, because that's the only thing that's going to make people realize that they can't engage in this sort of lunacy without consequences.
Yeah, and the consequences can be very grave indeed. We'll be following that story, among others, with you closely. Carolyn Glick, thank you so much for taking some time to join us. Keep up the great work at LATMA and at the Jerusalem Post and, needless to say, at the Center for Security Policy, and we'll look forward to visiting with you again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with New York Times best-selling author Daniel Silva about his art, well, anticipating life, it seems, and much more. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it. At www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fastballing philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined, I am absolutely thrilled to say, by Daniel Silva, a man whose writings and whose thoughtful analyses, often in the form of extraordinarily best-selling fictional works, but with an incredible insight into the challenges of our day, I have admired greatly. His name is Daniel Silva. You have almost certainly read one of his 14 books, or perhaps all of his 14 books, most of them really over-the-top New York Times bestseller. I guess there's no such thing, Daniel, as an over-the-top bestseller, but if there is, you're in that stratosphere. So welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It is really a delight to have you with us. We may have crossed paths at some point in one of your earlier lives as
we
a producer
definitely crossed paths
at CNN, but it's you've come a long way, baby, is all I can say. And congratulations on the latest, Portrait of a Spy. I confess I have not had a chance to read it yet, but I'm excited to do so, and thought it might be useful just to sort of use it as a way of introducing our audience to some of the things that you're concerned about and that we all should be thinking about in terms of the challenges of our time.
It is 14 books. I can't quite believe that, but it's the 11th to feature a character I created a few years ago named Gabriel Alon. He is a sometimes Israeli intelligence officer, spy, and assassin who has a very interesting cover job. He's one of the world's finest art restorers. And in this case, he is recruited by the CIA to mount an operation against a new jihadist terror network that has carried out a series of suicide bombings in Western Europe. It is a network that is led by a charismatic American-born cleric from Yemen, and it is a network that was built, unfortunately, with the unwitting help of the CIA itself.
Hmm. Now, this sounds uncannily similar to certain real-life personalities and events. Yes. Can we dare we say his name? Anwar al-Awlaki comes to mind.
Yes, he who shall not be named.
He shall not be named, but who was prominently featured on the most wanted list of the FBI and
yeah. Isn't it an interesting story how he got there? I mean, here was a guy who's living in this country, and first in San Diego, and then at the mosque in Falls Church, Virginia, about 5 miles from my house in Georgetown, where he was the imam. He had contact with a couple of the 9/11 hijackers in San Diego and in Virginia. You know, I examined the record very clearly, what I could, in open sources, and spoke to officers of the CIA and senior policymakers and members of Congress who were involved in this. And I thought that al-Awlaki was clearly linked to the 9/11 plot, and so did they. But he was an American person with an American passport and therefore held to a different standard. And he left the country, went to Europe, and now he's in Yemen. And this so-called man of moderation who was preaching tolerance and condemning the attacks of 9/11 is now perhaps the most dangerous terrorist in the world, and I just think it's a remarkable story, and I couldn't resist taking aspects of the real thing and turning it into my fictional character, Rashid al-Husseini.
Daniel, it's really that point that I think is so compelling about your works of fiction, is that you are, without exception, as far as I can tell, using your art as a means of riveting popular attention where it must be, namely on the national security threats that are very real and yet all too often, for example, at the present moment when we are completely embroiled in this deficit reduction debt ceiling fiasco.
Which has national security implications of its own.
Of course, including, you know, $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there in cuts to our defenses.
But if you were an al-Qaeda planner right now, would you not be just dying if you could take a shot at us right now when we are in this terrible... Now, they could do so much damage to our economy if they were able to mount a serious strike against us right now. It's something that I am concerned about, that in this precarious state that we are making ourselves more vulnerable to terrorist attack by our inability and the inability of our political leaders to manage our affairs. I'm beginning to lose confidence in our ruling class at the moment.
Yeah.
But
well,
I digress.
Well, no, I think this is very much the point that I wanted to draw you out on, and that is my sense of it is that the founders of this extraordinary republic wisely believed that an electorate that was informed would ensure that we had good governance. We are seeing, I think, absent, frankly, efforts like your own, altogether too little being done to ensure that the public is informed. And I just wondered, to what extent do you see that really as part of your mission? Not simply to entertain, but to, in a way, confront your readers and the larger, you know, public that is exposed to your work with these sorts of insights that they may simply not be getting anywhere else, and if they don't, may result in them making uninformed decisions at the polls and elsewhere.
You know, one of my the most entertaining and depressing segments that's sort of a regular on late night television is when the hosts go out in the street and they they show a picture of Joe Biden to a fan on the street, or ask him about, you know, what is the debt ceiling crisis about, and they have guy out there has absolutely no idea, and it's terrifying. But I see, first and foremost, I am there to entertain. I publish books in the summer, books that people take on airplanes and take to the beach. I try to spin an entertaining story that is populated by compelling characters. That said, I write about real-world issues, and as a result, you know, I have to analyze and have to impart a certain amount of information into the stories to make them understandable by the audience. And I do not shy away from sensitive, touchy material. I mean, right. Why would I?
Right.
And I think there are, larger truths in the world. I do. And I think that sometimes fiction and writers of fiction are better able to get at those larger truths in some cases than journalists or people who write nonfiction.
Yeah. Or people who write fiction in the form of news accounts, for example. But that's another show.
We'll do that segment next
please.
Time.
One of the things that, before we let you go on this particular segment, a delicate issue, shall we say, in Washington, but that I gather is a feature of this particular book. And again, we're speaking with Daniel Silva, author most recently of Portrait of a Spy. Namely, the two faces, as it's been called, of Saudi Arabia. Some would call it, I do, the double game.
Give
us quickly, in a minute or two, if you could, what you want us to take away from your writings on that subject.
Look, I mean, Saudi Arabia is a classic straddling state, okay? Pakistan, I think, is the granddaddy of them all. Here's a state that in the case of Pakistan, that is our supposed ally in the war on terrorism, combating terrorists and extremists and jihadists within its own borders, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, while at the same time supporting the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda against us in Afghanistan, or supporting Lashkar-e-Taiba and turning a blind eye while they carry out attacks against targets in India.
Or actually
Saudi Arabia to
attacks.
Much the same way, a straddling state where they are combating Islamic extremism while at the same time supporting and nurturing Islamic extremism. And we'll just leave out the fact that I believe that Salafist Islam and jihadist tenets flow more or less directly from Wahhabism, but let's just leave that aside for a moment.
Well, it's a subject for another conversation.
That is another one, but it's remarkable.
And I look forward to visiting with you about it, Daniel Silva. We are, alas, out of time. There's so much more to cover, but let us pick up on this point in the very near future, because you're absolutely right, I think, that Sharia or the Wahhabi practice of it is the wellspring of what we're facing, both with respect to the violent forms of jihad and the stealthy kind. And we're looking forward to visiting on that subject at greater length with you in the very near future. In the meantime, thank you. Congratulations on Portrait of
a
Spy.
Thank you so much.
And for taking a few minutes to talk to us about it here at Secure Freedom
thank
Radio.
You.
Next up, we'll be talking with Jim Hansen, giving us our boots-on-the-ground update on what is going down as the Taliban liquidates the leadership in Kandahar. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Real?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we are happily each week by Jim Hansen, one of the superb mill bloggers at black5.net, also contributing... featured contributor, I should say, at bigpiece.com, and one of our regulars here at Secure Freedom Radio. Jim, welcome back. We haven't had a chance to visit since this horrific attack in Norway. I've been talking to folks throughout the show about it. I'd love to get your take on what happened there and what it should mean for us.
You know, I mean, there's not much good to say about the way it went down and the response to it. And the unfortunate thing about this guy is he was a meticulous planner. You know, I mean, I hate to give him any credit at all, but he ran an extremely well-planned, well-organized, and properly segregated operation. And that's why he didn't get caught. He was at it for almost 9 years. You know, he first conceived the idea in 2002. You know, and to have maintained that level of secrecy, first of all, makes him some kind of obsessive, obviously, but second, it enabled him, I guess, you know, that obsession enabled him to do a good enough job of planning and using cover stories and using the rest of it that nobody caught on. And that's the unfortunate thing. When you get someone, you know, with that level of ideological blinders and that level of obsession, they can unfortunately use that to steer clear of anybody who could have turned him in. So it was sad that he got away with it. But there's really, you know, the takeaway is there's no way to stop a guy like that.
Yeah. I wonder, Jim, I don't know too much about video games, to be honest with you, but I wonder whether the obvious obsessive way he
delved into, for example, World of Warcraft and Dexter, as, you know, sort of, places he wanted to inhabit, you know, in a virtual way at the very least. Whether this doesn't, you know, really raise a question as to whether or not, that sort of indoctrination in psychopathic serial murder, shouldn't feature prominently in the kinds of, influences on this guy, as opposed to what we are endlessly being told, that he was a Christian and he was a, you know, a conservative and a right-wing extremist and so on, which Robert Spencer earlier in the program, debunked. But nonetheless, that's the meme that's being pushed out. What are your thoughts on the role of these video games and the significance they might have had in this instance?
I would probably lean towards the idea that the video game obsession, the rest of it, was more a result of his personality disorders to start with than a large influence on his ability to conduct this kind of attack. You know, I mean, if you have the mentality already that allows you to step over the line into killing, you know, or to contemplate killing, then I think you would be drawn to things like that as opposed to the idea that the video games themselves were in. So I don't think, and I think the problem was that this guy did not value human life and was willing to, as any terrorist, you know, use the death of innocents to further a political cause. So I think if you have that flaw, you know, in your character, in your personality, then you'll be drawn to things like, you know, television shows about mass murderers and video games that allow you to live out the fantasies that are tied to that kind of a belief. So I don't know, I don't think, you know, obviously I disagree with the idea that his Christian beliefs or anything like that were the driving factor, but I also would be hesitant to point to, you know, the video games as a driving cause, and I think they would be more a symptom of his previous disorders than anything else.
Well, that's a fair point, but I'm just concerned that they seem to be being neglected in the, well, postmortem is, I guess, a literal term for this exercise at the moment. Jim, let me ask you about Afghanistan. There have been a series of assassinations by the Taliban, or at least they're taking credit for them. Presumably they did the job, including one just earlier today of the mayor of the city of Kandahar. How serious a problem does this series of attacks represent for our efforts to secure the fruits of the surge and for that matter, the whole idea that we can usefully negotiate with the Taliban?
I'm convinced that it shows that we probably can't. You know, whatever deal we end up trying to make with the Taliban or whoever at this point is made from a position of weakness. You know, we're leaving and everyone knows it. Where's our negotiating strength? You know, we gave that away. I mean, sadly, we gave that away when Obama announced we'd be leaving on our way in. You know, so our ability to actually have that kind of negotiating power was lost at that point.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I guess the question is, will that negotiating power have been further diminished if the people that we had hoped to have, you know, take over for us are being liquidated left and right?
Yeah, well, and that's the problem is, you know, who are our negotiating partners? You know, the people we do partner with tend to die. And at this point, I don't know how you can have any level of trust that matters with any of the folks who are left standing. And I would be hesitant to believe that they have any reason to trust us long enough to make a deal when the Taliban are the ones who are going to be around long after we're gone. So it's a huge concern.
Yeah, truly. Jim Hansen is our guest from Black5.net and BigPeace.com. Jim, you bring the special operator's perspective to these conversations. We value it tremendously. Let me ask you about what I think of as the boots on the ground perspective on the thrashing around going on in Washington at the moment on the defense budget. Yesterday or recently at least, the new or soon to be installed chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dempsey, has taken the position that $800 billion worth of cuts in defense would have a very profound and adverse effect on national security. Some are arguing that we ought to actually increase it from there. There are others who were somewhat cynical, saying, well, look, this is just all gaming to make the $400 billion that Barack Obama has set his sights on seem reasonable by contrast. What's your take on it, and what would you advise members of Congress who are currently trying to figure out where to go on all of this?
Well, I think it's a mixture of all three. One of the first things I would say is I've talked to some folks who are actually inside the Pentagon at DOD right now trying to figure out what those cuts actually pertain to. You know, okay, if you tell us to cut $400 billion, tell us what mission you don't want us to perform, you know, and we'll eliminate that capability. There you go. You know, they're saying it's not going to be across-the-board cuts, and that, you know, eliminates the simplest way to do it. So the Pentagon is simply asking, you want $400 billion in cuts, tell us what you don't want us to do. Now, from what I have heard from those same folks, the $800 billion to $1 trillion cuts also include this illusory savings and this fictional savings, really, from not continuing the wars in Afghanistan, you know, and from a drawdown in Iraq, you know. So by that logic, we could also save, you know, several billion dollars by not reinvading Normandy and not, you know, refighting the Civil War. You know, so that's not real, and I think there's an understanding that when they do that, it is part of the negotiating process. You know, they will throw out that number of $800 billion and act like those are real cuts in the same way that a lot of the cuts in all the other plans are accounting gimmicks and whatnot. So I don't think there's any belief within the Pentagon that there are going to be any systemic real cuts that exceed that $400 billion that got thrown out last year. What those actually will amount to, your guess is as good as mine, and essentially at this point as good as the guess of the budgeters inside the Pentagon.
Well, listen, I hope you're right about that, that the folks in the Pentagon are right about it. My guess is we're going to find a lot of people holding to whatever higher numbers are laid out for defense because they see it as the bill payer for what they don't want to cut in entitlements and other programs. Jim Henson, let me ask you very quickly. We're hearing increasingly that Senator John Kerry, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, is going to be pushing forward in the near future with the ratification of the Law of the Sea Treaty, better known by its acronym, LOST. This is a treaty that I believe there's a lot wrong with it, but I'd be interested particularly in your take very quickly on the idea that this is going to somehow ensure our freedom of passage through the South China Sea or otherwise keep the Chinese in check there. What's your boots-on-the-ground perspective on the Law of the Sea Treaty?
Well, that was my old AO in first group, and I can tell you right now, the Chinese don't pay attention to any of that. You know, the only thing that secures our right of passage is those 90,000-ton floating ships that provide diplomacy. You know, aircraft carriers are the sea treaty that we need to stick with, and anything else is a joke because no one else abides by it. The Chinese are about to drop a giant oil platform, you know, well outside any recognized boundary of any treaty that's currently in effect. So they're already in violation of a treaty they're signatory to, and I have absolutely zero faith that they're going to abide by, you know, or help us abide by a treaty we shouldn't sign in the first place. So I think it would be crazy for us to do it. We gain nothing and give, you know, the international lawfare folks another cudgel to beat us with.
There you go. Jim Henson, well said and well said in time. Thank you for joining us as always. We'll look forward to visiting with you again next week. And that's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you'll join us for tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.